Welcome to episode 10 of the Wet Palette Podcast. The following interview features Corey Artanis of Three Sons Brewing Company. We originally recorded this a couple of years ago during COVID's first year, and before I even decided to launch a podcast. I wrote about it then, and you can find that article on my website at thewetpalette.com. Now, I decided to edit the audio for the podcast. The content is truly evergreen, as you will find, and it's an incredibly fun and candid interview. On it, we discuss the path he took that led him to find a cult-level interest and support way before his dream of a brewery came true, followed by the challenges and triumphs of finally opening Three Sons in Dania Beach, plus his future plans. Disclaimer, the audio isn't as crisp, given it was first recorded to be transcribed into an article at first and not initially intended to be in audio form. But trust me, it's still a good listen. Ready? Here we go. Unconventional ales for unconventional palates. Who came up with that?
I did.
You did? I love that. I like that. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to highlight Three Sons and get to know about you and your unmistakable passion project. And before I get into you brewing beer out of your kitchen, I would like to bring some perspective on board, starting with your background. You're not a Florida native. You're born and raised in Buffalo. Does Florida feel like home now?
Yeah.
After all this time?
Well, yeah, it's getting there.
It's getting there still? Not home yet?
No, because I used to vacation here as a child.
Okay.
So for the first probably, I don't know, 5-6 years living here, I felt like I was on vacation.
Okay.
So we're pretty much there. Yeah, we're getting there.
Good. After high school, you went to the military station in Washington. From what I read, a friend you met there had a father who was a home brewer, introduced you to the concept. Right. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
How much longer after that did you first take the first dive into home brewing?
Not until I moved here to Florida. So that would have been 5-6 years after I had my first home brew. When I was in Washington, when I was in the Army military, I had my first home brew, and then 6 years later I started home brewing.
Right, so you weren't doing it like regularly. What was the first brew style you attempted?
I attempted to make a Belgian wit.
Successfully?
You think so? Drank it. Yeah, it was good. I mean, I gave it to family or whatever. I can remember the flavor of it. It was probably not amazing, but it was definitely drinkable.
Like that. Why did you choose Florida after the military?
My brother's a firefighter in Miami-Dade, and he suggested I come down and become a firefighter.
And that did not?
No, I didn't. I went to the fire academy. When I moved down here in 2006, I joined the fire academy. And after the fire academy, I did my EMT and then my paramedics, and then I got a job at Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital. While I was trying to become a firefighter. So, and then eventually I just kind of, this took off. Yeah.
Oh, before that, you stayed with the paramedics and then you...
Yeah, I was at Joe DiMaggio for like 7 years.
I want to know, what was the first mainstream beer you ever tried or favored, if you can recall? Pre-craft beer. Just I'm talking like Miller Lite, Heineken, like as a teen or whatever.
Yeah, so growing up in New York, we drank a lot of 40s. It's a 40-ounce bottle, so it was like Old English or...
Okay.
It was like one of the big ones we drank.
That was like your staple?
Yeah, it was what was available. You could get them, you know, illegally, easily.
I'm not going to ask how old you were, so we could skip that.
Yeah.
And what was the first life-changing beer you ever had?
Life-changing?
Like the one that you were like, wait, this is not 40.
So, I guess maybe like the first craft beer that I ever had that I thought was like, wow, this is amazing. I'm trying to think what it would have been. Cyrenaic has a mixed 12-pack. I don't know if they still do or not, but I remember getting the mixed 12-pack and really enjoying a lot of the beers in that 12-pack. I think it was like a blackberry.
It was a mix.
Stout or something like that. Yeah, it was like a seasonal 12-pack that you could get, where it was like, you know, six different beer, like two bottles of each. And I think it was like a blackberry porter or something that. Yeah. That was like, I was like, oh, this is like, it was purple label. It was like the one that I'd always grab. But yeah, that was something that was enjoyable beer wise.
And it kind of sparked like, wait, it doesn't have to be like.
Yeah, beer didn't have to taste bad.
You then brewed for family when you started. You then brewed for family events and even your wedding.
Right.
What was your wedding brew like? And is that something you would improve on now and re-release for, say, an anniversary?
My wedding beer, I honestly... It was an India Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
So it was IPA. And my wife's last maiden name is Inglis, so with an I. And my last name is Artanis, so it's Inglis plus Artanis, IPA. Very cheesy, but...
It works.
Yeah, it works.
When I read that stuck out to me. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was a label that I designed. And I gave... I tried to give everyone who came to the wedding a bottle of it. And I honestly do not remember what that beer tastes like.
Oh, shit.
So it was that good of a wedding.
That's good.
But yeah, I'm sure, I'm 100% positive that the IPAs I do today didn't taste anything like that IPA. So.
But you were proud of the time. I mean, I think that's such a cool accomplishment. Cool.
It was probably at the time, I got married in 2008. So at the time, it was probably a beer, typical style of beer IPA for that year.
Mm-hmm.
So something more West Coast.
From there? You joined a bottle sharing group who were the lucky ones to taste the first draft of Last Snow, and things kind of took off from there. What came next?
The bottle share just kind of got my gears turning, and I had already been working at Joe DiMaggio and trying to become a firefighter for a little while, so I thought perhaps I could become a brewer somewhere. There wasn't a whole lot of breweries in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured I would build my resume up and start pouring my beer at different bars and restaurants or different events, craft beer events. So that's what I kind of focused on after that.
So you did, I think Tap 42 route?
The first bar that I poured my beer at was Tap 42.
Right.
I brewed a beer out in St. Petersburg at the Brewer's Tasting Room, which is it was like an incubator brewery for people who were home brewers aspiring to become brewers. And so I went out there, brewed a beer, met with the guys at Cigar City,
mm-hmm.
Let them try my beers and try to weasel my way into their beer festival. But that was probably one of the biggest things that catapulted me into where I am today.
I remember from experience, my husband and his friends, Corey from Three Sons, and my friend and I, the wives, were just there to drink, and we're like, what? And the guys are like, no, you don't understand what you're about to drink. And I was actually at the Brass Tap for Lauderdale. I forgot what the big release that day was. It was Summation or PB King.
Was it a flight of all barrel-aged stouts or something? Or
it was intense. It was in
Pembroke Pines Brass Tap?
No, it was Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was when I was brewing there.
Right.
And we did I have a picture. Beer fest, maybe, or...
I feel like I kind of lived a little bit of that
very cool.
Part of your process. What was the biggest challenge you encountered when trying to finally open from the time you selected this location?
The build-out was probably the biggest challenge. Just finding the location was a very big challenge. But then the build out in itself was very challenging. So
took about three years.
3 years, yeah.
Would you say it was what, like permits or just those kind of hurdles?
It was kind of like
logistics.
Everything that could go wrong went wrong type deals.
Right.
So there was a lot.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that issues. We worked with the bank. We had gotten an SBA loan as well, a pretty large one, to help with the build out and everything and opening the business. So that whole process also added on a lot of time. And then it was just one thing after another after another.
And then that built the hype even more, which was frustrating but good for you.
Yeah.
I think.
A little nerve-wracking, expectations, you know, continue to grow. So, but yeah.
And what has been the most rewarding now that it's open?
Just having it. Well, pre-COVID, having
freaking COVID
tasting room. You know, having people here and finally enjoying, you know, my beer at my place and you know, amazing food. Pretty much, you know, like the dream come true.
Like that. If you could go back in time and give Corey, the Corey that was about to embark upon this journey of opening Three Sons, a single piece of advice, what would it be? tell yourself.
That's a good question. I don't know. It seems like any advice that I would give myself might open a worse situation. Like if I said, do not hire that architect.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, and then we found another architect and you could have been, or she could have been, a lot worse than who we had. Little things like that, things that were like major hiccups, you know, if we went a different route. I guess one thing would be the plumbing. Our plumber, we went through three plumbers, and our plumber that we have, that we finally got, was amazing, and I wish, you know, he was on the job from the beginning.
And you would have started with that, yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot. We wasted a lot of time.
Are you saying that because of the kind of draining and things that you need for the
Yeah, it's a huge part of the build out is the plumbing in here. So, you know, there was a lot of things that we had to, like, that were done and need to be redone or taken down or broken apart, and like concrete set and had it been broken because the plumbing wasn't done right and all sorts of things like that. And it was a mess. So our electrician was amazing. Yeah, the build out was the toughest thing. So anything I could do to help
ease that.
Yeah, with the build out, that's what I would probably have told myself.
Tell me about the overall design and concept of this brewery.
Like
the idea going in.
Yeah, so that, a lot of that was actually my father. Mm-hmm. So he was like the visionary when it came to the tasting room and the bar design and the layout and, you know, with the kitchen and how everything came together. That was all my father that spearheaded, like that was all his vision. So yeah, he did a great job with that.
It is said that it can be difficult to scale up from the homebrew level to professional level systems. You've had a lot of success and gained a large following on beers you developed as a home brewer. Mm-hmm. After this experience working with these larger brew systems, like when you were Brass Tap and Tap 42, before you opened your own, how do you think you have fared so far in scaling up on a system you now have in-house? And do you think you are where you need to be? Do you ever find yourself having to tweak your recipes and your process because of the larger scale now?
Yeah, it's always a constant tweaking. There isn't many things that are, there's not many recipes that we do that are set in stone, that are the exact same, that brewed the exact same way we brew every time we make them. So there is that, I don't know, that kind of aspect of it. We, scaling up from 2 barrels, which was at the brass tap, to 20 barrels, so 10 times, I don't think it was that difficult. The most difficult thing is I always use the analogy of like cooking in a new kitchen. Like, if you know, you might be an amazing cook at your house, but if I invite you over to my house to cook and I have gas, or I have induction burners, or you know, it's electric and you're not used to that, that, you know, time and temperature is a huge aspect when it comes to cooking, and beer is the same way. So it's pretty much dialing in all of the times and the temperatures of the, you know, the equipment that we have here. So that plays a major role in brewing. So that took time to be able to really dial in our brew house. What else?
Room for growth. You think you're where you
want to be? We definitely, our beer is constantly evolving. So we have beers that are coming out now that are way better than they were when we originally, I always, you know, continue to say that our beer is just continually gets better, because we've only been here for a year, a little over a year and a half maybe. So it's not like, you know, we opened up in March of last year, so the beer will get better, and I can, you know, we constantly learn from friends and other brewers who I brew with, so there's always that growth. There's always new articles or magazines and information that comes out. There's new sources of hops, there's new grains, there's, you know, there's new enzymes, there's new everything. There's a lot that goes into the brewing. We have we're building out our QA/QC lab, so just to be able to dial in our beers for as far as making sure that beers are, we continue to brew them with the same consistency and
QA/QC quality something, quality control.
Yeah, quality analysis and quality control. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you know, it never stops.
Never stops learning.
Yeah, you're evolving. Always learning and evolving. And I mean, there's a handful of recipes maybe out of the 250 beers that we brew or I've brewed. And there's maybe a handful that I won't change the recipe, and I like it, and that's it, and it's done. And it's good the way it is, and I'm happy with it. But other than that, you know, processes change, palates change, and you know, you kind of roll with the punches or the I don't know how you call it, taste buds or flavors.
With the flow, you roll with what you
like
that. So. Your list of awards and recognition is impressive. Which are you most proud of? Rate Beer, Hunapu, all those individual.
Most proud for me would be Hunapu, the first year that we won, 2015. Yeah, that, without a doubt, that was like mind blowing.
And I read you weren't even aware they were like awarding anything.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that there was any type of awards. I'd already, like, you know, we'd kicked our beer, so I was going to have fun and drinking, and went to another, you know, it was at like a bottle share tent at like the very end of the parking lot, and like, yeah, someone like came up with an award and was like, yo, dude, you won first place, like best beer or best brewery. And I was like, what? and then someone else was like, yo, you won both. You won first place for best brewery as well. And I was like, oh my God, that was probably, yeah, that was like an Olympic gold for me.
I am still surprised at the number of people who don't know about the insanity and the hype about releases, the lines, the bottle shares, the intensity that goes into that. I know I casually mention I'm into craft beer and people talk about, oh, yeah, I love my Miller Lite. I'm kind of like, no, it's different. And they're like, no, no, but you don't. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to let it go. Clearly, there's still much to share about this and awareness as much as maybe like you're in this world and we, you know, we are in a way too as members and as, you know, trying to get bottle shares and stuff. But there's still people that don't understand. So can you tell a little bit, talk to the readers, listeners, a little bit about the madness and passion of this craft beer community?
I guess I don't even know. It would be like comparing things to like new Jordans, that kind of, like people that are into sneakers, or you know, people that are into, I don't know, like wine or certain.
I think it's beyond wine because I'm a huge wino, but I have never stood in line for a bottle of wine.
Yeah, but it's the prices.
The night before. That too, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the prices, like people are willing to pay, you know.
For
you know,
one little bottle.
$500 for a bottle of wine. And it's right. Like, oh, it's normal, you know. And, you know, some people will pay $500 for a bottle of beer.
Or more.
Or more. But, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, if you're really into, you know, music or clothes or, you know, fashion, it's just people who are extremists or super passionate about that specific thing. And in this case, it would be beer. But so, you know, I mean, it's hard to explain. If you really enjoy something and love something, you know, you'll do whatever you need to do to obtain it and try it. And you know, they call a lot of people tickers, so they just want to, like, you know, tick every beer that's, like, right, the hardest beers to get. You know, it's just, you meet new people, and there's the whole social aspect of it as well, or it was, and so, you know, it's kind of like a whole brotherhood, and everyone talks about the beer, we share the same interest, and everyone, like, gets along, and I don't know, it's just like a big, fun, happy group, and everyone likes to talk about beer and drink the beer and trade the beer and, you know, waiting for beer in lines. You get to try, most releases when you go to, people are sharing bottles in line. You get to try new stuff, you're talking to people, and, you know, it's like trading Pokemon cards or something. Like, it's like, oh, who can collect them all? It's kind of, I don't know, it's just that. So
I know I hate festivals and I hate outside concerts and places where I feel congested. So when I first started going to a couple of releases, I felt, I told my husband I didn't want to go because I don't want to go there. It's going to be hot and people. He said, no, you didn't understand. And after that, anytime he set up any kind of beer festival, stuff like that, I would go because everyone was so nice. And even the time releases that I thought, oh, because everyone was just hyping up A, B, or C beer. And at 8 o'clock, that line, I'm thinking Miami, this line is going to get like, and people were rushing there, but it wasn't like, it was chill. And everyone, exactly what you said, camaraderie, and people were like sharing their beer. And I like that. You're right.
Yeah.
And it's sad about what you said about the tickers, because are they really enjoying the beer, or are they just like obsessed about this thing of like collecting and I did it. Are they not enjoying their drinking?
Yeah, usually
it's a little sad.
Yeah, usually, yeah, that's a negative somewhat connotation, I guess. They're just trying to try all the biggest and best beers, but I mean, I assume they enjoy a lot of beer and they're going after these beers because they're supposed to be really good and hard to get, and
hopefully they do get to enjoy that. Because that happens in wine too.
Oh yeah.
You have done quite a few collaborations since you opened the brewery, and I've always wondered how that process works. Do you guys share recipes and brewing secrets, or do you kind of just bring your B game recipe so you don't give away your secret sauce to other breweries? Inquiring minds want to know.
I'm actually doing a collab right now. with civil society. The guys are out there sitting at the table. We are, yeah, so collaborations are kind of like a meeting of the minds, you know. It's you know, either you're really good friends with people, which is pretty much how all of the collaborations go now for myself, or, you know, originally just getting into the beer scene, you respect people and you enjoy their beers, and so you want to do a collaboration, and they respect you and they enjoy your beer, and so you guys will educate each other on how, you know, processes and how, you know, recipe designing and things like that. So usually a lot of people are pretty forthcoming about, you know, beers that they do and how they do them, and you do the same, and, you know, so it's kind of a win-win situation.
Tell me a crazy story you ever experienced while on a beer line or a beer line for one of your releases.
Beer, like
something.
Seeing a beer line, or, well, that I have on our Instagram page, if you look at, which Hennepu it was. I think it was Hennepu 2017 or 16. It might have been 16 or 17. I don't know. It was off campus. It wasn't at Cigar City. I have a Instagram video on our a video on our Instagram page, and it's a ridiculous line. Like, I've been to lots of beer festivals and I have never seen a line like this line. And I recorded it in a time-lapse recording. So it starts off, and that's, you like, just see how fast I walk this line. And it's just like, and you're just watching it and watching it and watching it. And you're like, what the heck? Like, what is this? And then you go, and it turns, and it heads towards the tent. It's an insane line, which is extremely humbling. But yeah, so that's probably like, that's a crazy line. The second longest, well, another long line that I've seen. I can't say which one was long or whatever. But I was at a beer fest in California, and it was the Firestone Walker Invitational, and they had for the first year, I think, Alchemist, which they do Heady Topper, and they were there pouring beers. It was like the first beer fest they'd ever poured at. Like, in order, and they're like the highest rated beers, IPAs, in the world, like year after year after year after year. And this was the first beer fest that they had ever poured at outside of like Vermont. And the line for their beer was insanely long. I remember.
Intense.
Yeah, so.
I know there's quite a bit of buying and selling of beers on the black market and trading that goes in the craft beer world. I was told that some of your early extremely limited beers sold for over $1,000. What are your thoughts on the dark underbelly of this craft beer world? And do you care if people buy your beer, sell and trade, and bring mules to get extra bottles?
So it seems to be dying, that whole secondary market. Right now, it seems to be somewhat of a thing of the past. I think it was, at one point, it was people were doing it and they were cool with it or whatever. I've been told from people that now it was nothing like it used to be. So I think it's just dying down. People are like trading, or they're actually going to enjoy it, or, you know, there's so many breweries now that local breweries are making really good beer. And you can just go and get awesome beer, and you don't have to trade anymore. You don't have to go and wait in lines for this, or seek out, you know, spend money or try to win a beer or any of that stuff. So so I think all that's dying down. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, once you sell something to someone, it's kind of hard to, you know,
to track him.
Yeah, try to regulate what someone does with the bottle of beer that they buy from you. So I don't it's really, you know, I don't really try to worry about things I can't control in that regards. If people are blatantly doing it that are like members of ours, they all know that if we catch them selling beers, that they'll be removed from our family membership, our beer membership. So, the whole mule thing, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't really see it much anymore. If someone wants to spend, you know, whatever, if they want to spend money on the beer, I don't know, it's kind of a, you know, they have like 15 people in line, you know, muling for them, it's one thing, but, I don't really, you know, if they have a person, like their mother or their father or their wife muling, it's
let's switch it up. I love the name Three Sons and how it came to be organically in a pinch before an early event, and it stuck. What do your kids think about the business and what Daddy does? Something tells me they're going to be a hit in school.
Yeah. They think it's cool now. When I was winning awards and, you know, was in magazines and, you know, newspapers and stuff like that, they were like, really loved it, so they always like to see me in like an article, like in a news article or magazine, or you know, or on the radio or whatever it is. But so they think that aspect's cool. They like the fact that it's called Three Sons. They're excited about it. Somewhat. My youngest is 6 and my oldest is 12, and then I have the middle aged as well, 10-year-old. So I'm supposed to have an artist come and paint a mural of them on the wall over here by the stairs.
Like graffiti style? For real art?
Realism. Okay. Yeah, so the three of them like doing different things. Like one's going to be like reading a book, the other one's going to be playing a game, and they'll be like chilling on the stairs there. Gigantic versions of themselves. So that is, they're waiting for that to happen. But yeah, they like it. They don't like coming here. Other than that, they're like,
I mean, they could eat pizza.
Yeah, but they don't like burnt the wood fired pizza too much.
No, so. Not yet.
Yeah, these guys have a very sophisticated palate. It's rice, beans, and steak for them.
Is your wife Latin?
I'm half Puerto Rican, and then
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't read that anywhere that I looked.
Yeah, my father's Puerto Rican, and then my wife.
What?
Her mother's Panamanian. So, we have the Latin blood.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Where in Puerto Rico is your dad
from? Well, his mother was from Ponce.
And
father was from San Juan.
Do you speak Spanish?
I can speak.
You can.
Enough to live.
And you understand.
I understand.
Especially down here now.
But it depends on who I'm talking to.
Okay. Not the fast-talking Cubans?
Sometimes it's very difficult. So.
A lot of accents.
Yes, there are, yeah.
How often do you drink beer nowadays, and what is your go-to, if there's any?
I drink beer, you know, a couple days a week, I'd say 3-4 days a week, and it's just, majority of the time it's a Pilsner, our Pilsner on drop, I love it, it's easy to drink, and I can drink a lot of them, and still stand.
Right.
Versus our, like, triple IPA, you know, I just want one and done, I'll go for the triple, but if I want to, like, be social, it'll be.
Tell me about the current lineup in the tap room.
We have a lot of IPAs, a lot of sours, and a couple of stouts. Everything's been pretty stellar coming out. Everything is really fresh because we're brewing a lot more than we ever had. We brew every week, and we have new beers that come out every week. So everything is fresh, and everything's been coming out pretty good. We have something for everybody.
And how did, I didn't want to ask this, but now I kind of want to know, during COVID, during shutdown, during all that, not shutdown, but during this whole madness, these months, do you think that helped you creatively to like give you more time to maybe come up with new?
Yeah, it definitely changed our business model. All of our business was relied on over the counter here, people coming in, dining and drinking. Luckily, our brew house is large enough to where we can switch to more of a wholesale model now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we are, what we're doing. It gave us a breather, some time to like step back and reflect, and
mm-hmm.
where we need to concentrate more in the tasting room and outside of the tasting room and things like that. So it hasn't been like a horrible thing for us here.
Is something you want to add later on, or would you consider adding tasting appointments, kind of like you do for wineries? Like, so if someone wants to get a tour and tasting kind of a thing, and then it's like this price, is that something you would consider adding?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we actually talked about that probably a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago. Talked about after the whole COVID thing and things start to get back to semi-normal, doing tours where, you can come in, you get, a flight of four-ounce pours. We walk you through brewery, talk about the brewing process, how everything is done, maybe get a pour off of one of the tanks, which is really cool to be able to do that. And it's in the plans.
I like that. So what are your dreams for the brewery within the next 5 years, like moving forward, forgetting COVID, like after that, get rid of that?
Next 5 years, it would probably just to really, I want to incorporate food a whole lot more than what we have been able to. We discussed starting a food and a foodie club,
mm-hmm.
to really showcase the food that we have here. Nikolai is extremely talented, and I want to make sure that he can do
everything he wants to do. Mm-hmm.
We have done one beer dinner so far, and it was amazing and just blew everyone's minds. So we're discussing doing a lot more food-orientated, food and beer pairings, cheese and beer pairings, dessert and beer pairings, just food dinner, just dinners, potentially starting a club, collaborations with other chefs that he's friends with, I'm friends with in the beer world. So really just incorporating a whole lot of that. I'd like to grow a little bit more in the brewery, bring in some new tanks. We're looking to bring in a canning line, a centrifuge, which is a pretty cool piece of equipment, and really just like try to maximize our output, what we can do here, both beer and food wise. So finish the patio area.
I saw that looks different than the last time I was here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so we're working on that. Some cosmetic things outside, also inside with the mural, and just spice things up a little bit inside, make it a little more lively instead of sterile. But
I think you're doing pretty good. What else? Is there anything I didn't touch on that you want everyone to know about Three Sons Brewery?
It's a family business. My father and I are the two co-founders. He's supported me through this whole thing. Without him by my side, working with him, none of this would have existed. Obviously, behind every man there's a woman. My wife has been extremely supportive, and and amazing throughout this whole journey.
Maybe she remembers the beer, the wedding flavor.
Yeah, she might remember. Actually, she doesn't drink beer.
I read that. Yeah
she does not drink beer. Well, she does now because I've been making them, like some of the sours that we have in there. If you decide you want to try some beers, we have some fruit sours that are just unbelievable. So she drinks those. But yeah, no, just, you know, we're here to stay. We're not going anywhere. We look like we're all just extremely passionate about what we do. You know, like beer with me, food with Nikolai, my father. He's extremely passionate about the experiences people have here, which, you know, we all are as well. But, you know, every time he's here, he's at every table. He's like knows the little baby's name at this table and this person's name at that table. So, you know, just building that experience for
people.
That's
hospitality.
And, yeah, it's like, yeah. You know, so we clearly all enjoy what we do, and we just look forward to being able to continue to do that in the future. So.
It's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to follow Three Sons on their social media for upcoming releases and events. Up next on the Wet Palette, we discuss our April restaurant visits featuring Lido Restaurant, La Fresa Francesa, Luca Osteria, Kehori, Macchialina, and Porto Soli. And later on this month, I feature sommelier Adrian Lopez of the Ariette Hospitality Group on my Some Like a Hat series. Not one to miss it. Until then, friends, from my palate to yours, cheers.